Hello and welcome to Gabagool, a Sopranos podcast. My name's Ben Vanel. I'm joined by Adam Knox. And Knox, I've got a question for you.
Okay.
In the Czech Republic 2, we love podcasts. Ever had The Sopranos?
I get what you're going for. I've never heard of the sequel to The Czech Republic 2. Do I need to see the first Czech Republic to understand it?
Yes. Do you need to have seen Czechoslovakia and the Austro-Hungarian Empire to understand the Czech Republic?
Kind of. Those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. That's a lesson we're learning from The Sopranos again and again.
Absolutely.
Another lesson we're learning from this particular episode of The Sopranos, The Legend of Tennessee Moltisanti, which is the one we'll be talking about today, is that this show is not going to stop with the dream sequences.
Yes. We get Christopher this time. We're out of Tony's hair. We're into Christopher's. This whole episode is really focused on Christopher.
Yeah.
As you might have guessed from the title of the episode. And they employ that same technique they did with Hesh in one of Tony's dream sequences for Chris here.
Yeah.
They have him zooming around on a little dolly.
Chuck him on a skateboard. He's sitting at the deli where he killed the guy who he keeps calling emails still, even though he's haunted by the ghost of this man he murdered. He still calls him email. and his voice is kind of looping in Christopher's head saying, have you ever had our pork? We love pork too in the Czech Republic. Ever had our sausages? And he's watching a coffee steamer thing heat up and, reach a boiling point.
Yes.
Floats through the deli and has this little dream where, there's a bunch of dream shit going on. Adriana's eaten a pork thing, a sausage in a suggestive manner, and then she turns into Carmella.
That's right.
Which, I don't know, is that some Oedipus shit because she's like a mother figure to him?
I don't know what that meant, actually. I was thinking that at the time. I didn't think that she represented anything in particular to him.
No, I'm not sure Tony, if we've seen them even interact, really, other than when he goes around to their house to talk to Meadow and Thingo's kid.
Yeah. But maybe it is just that free association thing of if Tony is his father figure, Carmella is the mother figure.
Right. And he's some dream shit's going on, including this dead man wrapped in a body bag or, a mob style body bag, just plastic wrap with duct tape. And he's holding, they're having dream David Lynchy talk where he's like, give me a salami sub, hold the mayo, we're out of mayo, da 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 da. And eventually this guy starts telling Chris, you fucked it up.
Yes, yeah. I've got someone to show you. You forgot these. And he gives him a handful of bullets. Clearly, Christopher is paranoid. I don't think this is meant to be some sort of genuine message from the afterlife or from the other side. I think this is Christopher second-guessing himself.
Yeah, there's one element of it where I think he specifically says, you left three in my head, one in the table. And that's maybe the one bit that Christopher is actually kind of properly picking up on from real life in his dream. Because they mention later on, he's like, it was a hot gun. They couldn't trace it back to us with the bullets. But if he left one in the table, maybe they could. So
right.
They've been pretty specific about that. But he's got a helper hand. He's got the thing from the Adams family down in the cupboard, or the
the counter, the display case, I guess. Yeah,
meat cupboard.
Yeah,
and
the meat cupboard.
he gets grabbed by it and gets shocked awake in a sweat.
Yes. Yep. So he, this is all about his internal life. This episode, it's his wants and dreams and fears. But there is a big plot thing happening at the same time.
Absolutely. And I love the extra bit of, because Chris has been a young hothead. We've gotten that off of him so far. But for a sort of a junior in, not junior, but a junior. Junior's at the top, but this junior's down the bottom. How does that
work? Wait. A junior? You mean Anthony Junior then?
No, that's another, you've confused it even further.
But who's on first?
I'll tell you, it's Christopher, and he's doing a weird job of it. He is a very strange young man. we learn this episode because, like,
yes,
he seemed competent at the soldiery type of jobs that he has to do for Tony and the mob and everything. And
yep.
This one definitely shows a lot more of that, like, oh no, he's young as hell and he is a little dim.
Yeah, he's a little dim. He's a little misguided, or he's certainly dim. The computer stuff is insane. But
yeah,
he has different ambitions, maybe, than what we might have assumed.
Yeah. He's at a wedding. Everyone's at this wedding the next scene. And it's like the daughter of one of the other capos is getting married.
Yeah, it's Larry. It's Larry. Because Larry pops up in the next episode. We've watched a couple in a row and we'll be doing that one next, obviously. But yeah, it's Larry, one of those capos.
Yeah. And so he's at this wedding, gives a unwrapped computer, clearly stolen,
yes,
to the bride, yes, here. And he's like, hey, I got one of these myself. It got such a good write-up. Okay. Mm. and like everyone who's anyone of this mob group is kind of at this wedding. They're all, you know, even Livy is there. She's immediately goes to Larry like, you're still fucking that girl who's not your wife.
That's right. Even in that, it's like, no, we have to literally usher you away at this point, Livia. This is not even a joking matter. This is like, what the fuck are you doing? We're at a wedding.
She calls him darling. And so, I mean, he calls her darling. So she's like,
that's right.
All right, let me up the ante.
Yeah.
The capo guy, Larry, is like, look, I know we're at a wedding. I know that there's this thing, but I've got something I'm freaked out about. I'm going to talk to you all about it later. And, you know, they do the toasts and whatever. But then word is spreading around this wedding and they are fretting about the impending FBI investigation into them. Someone knows someone who knows of someone who has an in at the FBI, and apparently the hammer's coming down soon. They're doing indictments. It's all pretty hush-hush, but they're like all, you know, chatting to each other, freaking out about it, and eventually get into like this little huddle.
Yes.
Christopher as well, it's worth pointing out, like, while they're all kind of going like, hey, well, rumors, Christopher's like, damn, they're gonna want me. I'm one of the guys. I'm a made guy. Yeah. He's saying that this other person, they're like, are you? Did you get made? And he's like, no, but
you know. I'm about to be. I did this thing, it was really good, you know, like surely I'm one of the guys.
It's on its way. And so they form this little huddle with Junior and all the capos and what's his name? Michael? Is that the Junior's guy?
Oh, Mikey Junior's like second.
Mickey?
Yeah.
Something like that. And they all have.
I think Mikey, yeah.
Mikey, that's it. And so they're all talking. Junior's being undercut in this huddle as well. Everyone's kind of going, Tony, what should we do? And he's like, I just fucking told you what to do. I'm Junior. I'm the leader. We don't worry about it. And Tony's like, yeah, what Junior said. But Junior, I'm sure the next thing you were going to say is that we should probably do some spring cleaning while we can, right? And he's like, yeah. Of course I was going to say that next.
Yeah, I was literally, you just interrupted me saying that. Come on, like, what are you talking about here?
So, they're all pretty certain that this is coming. They flee from this wedding. They completely ruin it. They get the fuck out of there. The bride is crying.
They fuck the wedding, yeah. Because there's a bit of them having fun. Like, the lead up to this.
Right.
Is like, yeah, there's a bit of Larry being like, hey, I got to talk to you later. But we don't even know what it is at that point. And then it's like, hey, these guys are hanging out. It's like a big family. It looks like a really fun time, genuinely.
It looks like a nice wedding. But once again, they, you know, their priorities lie with business first, even over the thing that they would say is first, which is family.
Right. Yes. Spot on.
So they go home, Tony and Carmella, and they start packing up all their illegal shit. They got a bunch of cash in the vents. They got guns. And Meadow sees this and picks up on what's going on. She's like, get rid of your computer. Like, wipe it. The feds are coming. He's like, and why? You've got pornography on there. Anthony Jr. And he races over to the computer.
Yeah. He like competes in the long jump. He like gets 4 meters from one side of the room to the other. He's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Just but, starts wildly typing.
Yes. But dear, I felt I
computer repairman, can you come round here?
I found this scene with Tony and Carmella kind of darkly funny, right? Like, it's them putting a increasingly large series of guns into a duffel right. bag, and it's like it really crosses the line into, you know, Goodfellas or something, where you're like, this is serious mob shit. Carmella really, like, you know, she said before, she's admitted, like, oh, I've bought into this life. But yeah. as we see her load a pump-action shotgun into a duffel bag, it really drives it home.
She doesn't seem fazed by it either, does she? She's taking this in stride, other than the fact that she finds out that her engagement ring may have been stolen.
Yes, yeah.
So then we get, you know, some shots of the other people doing the same. There's helicopter noises and Pussy is burning a bunch of files.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Christopher is sitting at home on a big 90s laptop trying to write out his little script that he's working on for his big mob movie that he wants to make. We know he's into movies. We saw him go, holy shit, that's Martin Scorsese at a nightclub.
Yes, yes, yes.
But can I read you verbatim what he's written down so far that we get a shot of?
Please do.
Chip, all lowercase. Yes, no full stop. Rocco, I thought I was dead, but I managed to get the drip on him. This man,
fuck yes,
is a hell of a writer. Look, I don't want to make fun of any real problems that Chris might have, but he's fictional. And the script is also called Made Man.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Unspecified computer shit happens to the script and it all deletes itself somehow. And Adriana comes in and she's like, it got stored in the backup RAM or some shit that doesn't happen.
No, she said like buffer memory or something, I think. It's like, that doesn't like, that's in no way related to this.
It's very funny to be writing a scene about someone writing a bad script and then have Adriana say, it got deleted into the buffer memory. Like, yeah, that's got the drip on him, but for computers.
Yeah, and just like having the sound effect every time he touches a key.
Yeah.
Yeep, it's very yeep, like...
Yeep, yeep. Yeep,
yep, yep, yep.
He yells at the computer and calls it an asshole.
But Adriana's very proud of him. Like, when he settles down, she is like, you've been so focused on this thing. I've never seen you apply yourself to anything like it before. I assume because she's never seen him apply himself to being a mob henchman, which he, like you said, he is apparently very good at. Mm. He's passionate, but he's very, you know, he's a good soldier and... He's a dedicated writer. He loves the movies.
Right. And like, yeah, exactly. Some people who don't trust easily do trust him in the mob. So
yes.
he's got a place there. And yeah, him and Adriana, she's very sweet. She's like,
yes.
Hey, look, this sucks. And here's how you fix a computer. And look at you, Tennessee Williams. I'm proud of you. She's very supportive. And that's nice to see. They out of every, like, you know, I mean, we haven't seen a lot of the two of them, but we do see, at least between Tony and Carmella, we've seen a lot of conflict there. They're the main characters, of course, we have, but like, it makes sense. They got a lot of conflict in their marriage and stuff, and this seems nice.
Totally. I think they have a good dynamic because she does make fun of him a bunch.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get pissed off and he doesn't get his hackles up. You know, the time when he was like coming out of the hospital and he thought people were trying to kill him and she was like, oh, they're hiding in the bin.
Right.
You know, and here she's sort of making fun of his spelling a little bit, but she's helping him at the same time. I agree. I think it seems like a relatively good relationship. One of the all-time great lines of The Sopranos is in this scene when Christopher says, that smell in Blockbuster, that candy and carpet smell I get high off.
Yeah.
He
loves the movies.
But he likes Blockbuster as well, especially like not just going to the cinema, not the silver screen. He's like, he likes Blockbuster, which makes sense. He's probably going getting VHS tapes a whole bunch.
All the time. I used to back then. I'd have gotten the VHSs of The Sopranos if I could have back in the day.
Totally. Me too. I also used to get high off the smell of candy and carpet.
And everything I've totally... written is fucking terrible as well. So I'm Christopher, basically. But yeah, also Adriana's like, look, the script, whatever, you know, I'm glad that you're applying yourself, but should we not be maybe packing up your illegal shit? Isn't that computer stolen?
Right.
And he's like, ah, whatever. But the the other guy from the Bada Bing, I don't know his name, that like, this guy's very funny. There's a scene with him later on that I like a lot.
Oh, the taller, the really tall guy?
The kind of big guy. He calls him Chris up and tells him to turn on the news. And
I think it's Georgie.
That sounds right.
If it's the same guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Chris turns on the news and there's a report about, hey, the FBI is about to, you know, take down some of this mafia stuff. They've got indictments going. We cut to Melfi, who's also watching this. And there's some mafia expert guy who's been writing a long-running soap opera about the mafia in the show.
Yeah, that guy had a weird voice. That's what I remembered about him.
He also, like, the reporter, let me just go back a little in the episode so I can get this exactly, because she's like, America's longest running soap opera writer, Jeffrey Winnick, he's welcome here. For years, the FBI has been telling us that the mafia is all but dead. And she's clearly leading into a question, and he goes, let me interject.
Let me interject.
She's clearly about to ask a question of like, is that actually the case? And he's like,
right.
Shut the fuck up. That's not the case.
I'm going to talk over you to finish your sentence and I'm going to disagree. Yeah. I got the script up of this episode and all of the episode scripts are online.
Oh, nice.
Which has been very helpful for me getting that opening line perfect in the intro. But yes, Jeffrey Wernick, America's longest running soap opera. I don't
mafia.
Know.
I don't think it's
real. Yeah, yeah. Nah.
So maybe that's something we're going to come back to, or like they're setting up in this episode so that if they want to have some parallel bullshit happening on a TV show, they've established that there is a TV show about the mafia in this world.
Yeah, possibly.
And also Tony and Carmela are watching this report as well. They're talking about how Junior's the new boss and...
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be exactly what's going on. The news is telling the truth.
Yes.
And everyone's looking kind of stressed out by it, as you can imagine. And then they're talking about Brendan.
Yes. Oh, I think I don't think I knew that Junior's real name was Corrado, which I found out from this news thing. Corrado Junior Soprano.
I don't know if we've heard Corrado yet.
Yeah, we may not have.
And then we hear it a bunch in this episode.
Yes.
So yeah, Christopher is not really stressed out by the news that the FBI might be coming to raid them, but pretty annoyed that Brendan seems to now be the famous mob figure rather than him. He keeps checking like, did you watch from the beginning? Did they say my name at any point? He's really keen to be somebody in the eyes of both the actual people in the mafia. Like, it makes sense. He's ambitious, obviously, but he's concerned with it to the point of being petty.
Yeah, it seems narcissistic or like self-centered or something. It's just like he's just like, I want to be famous too. I want to be on the news. They call Brendan an associate of the Soprano family,
right?
Which on top of Christopher not getting mentioned, he's like, fucking associate, he was a friend of mine,
right?
Like, what do you
I brought him in.
Yes,
and now the show's bringing in Melfi's extended family. We meet
I love this episode. Yeah. But I did not like this aspect of it. I understand why it's there to represent an alternative perspective on this. Maybe it's just the performances I wasn't into. Obviously, I love Lorraine Bracco as Melfi, but I felt like this was the weaker of the plot lines.
I did like it in so much as what it's doing in the script, which is to talk to the audience about a thing. There's probably some script writing term for it that I don't know, and I should buy a script program on my 90s computer and learn it, but
yes,
it is clearly a direct like argument being made to the audience, or like a qualification being made to the audience of like, hey, we know that this isn't Italians that we're talking about
here. Right,
and that's basically the discussion that her family is having. Her 19-year-old son who looks like the Weezer guy. What's his name? Cuomo? Rivers Cuomo?
Rivers Cuomo, yeah. Well, he's in college. Yeah, he's probably 19 then. Yeah, he's gone off to Bard College, which I don't know. I think that's in New York.
Yeah, Shakespeare College in New York. Here's an alternative joke for that. Bard College, I rolled for Paladin College.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Very nice stuff. Yeah.
Here's an alternative joke for that. Bard College. No, I got banned from there. Bard.
Okay, Bard College, I prefer. Yeah. Bard College, I prefer Lisa College.
Nice. Or it'd be like Leader College.
Yes. Yeah. Maddie.
Yeah, Maddie. Hoder.
No, this isn't the Game of Thrones podcast, Knox.
Oh, sorry. It's using this family in this scene as kind of a excuse to have this conversation that I think is an interesting conversation of like how average like Italian families feel about their representation, because the reason they're having this is because Melfi kind of lets it slip to them like, hey, that guy on the news. Yeah, I'm kind of, maybe he's a patient. She doesn't specifically say who, but
yeah. What does she say? She drops, oh yeah, because the son said uses very awkwardly a bit of Italian slang.
Yeah.
Or anti-Italian slang, I think it is. He says Ginza, it's short for Guinea. Guinea is, a derogatory term.
Yes.
About Italians. Specifically, I think, Italians in the mob. I guess maybe that's the only place I've seen it used, the Departed and stuff like that.
I'd assume that it's a specific region of Italy or something, or who knows?
I don't go in
for that sort of stuff, me. Not me personally. Mm. Not really into slurs. Other than
that's brave.
Just with
brave of you.
General speech that I'm doing, I sometimes slur that.
Yeah,
I don't have the best
couple of beers
diction all the time.
Obviously.
But they're kind of having a talk about that, and they're like her ex-husband is there, her parents, I think, and their son, and the husband or the ex-husband is very much of the you shouldn't treat this guy. This guy is not only a plague to the representations of Italian Americans everywhere, but also just personally, you shouldn't be endorsing this by helping him out.
Yeah.
This guy calls it moral relativism bullshit. He's like, this guy's definitely evil and you're definitely good. That's going to come
right
up. And so there's no middle ground.
I think maybe I just didn't like this guy. I find him annoying.
Yeah.
There's a bit of fourth wall breaking stuff as well, because he says earlier, like, huh, Italian male seeing a shrink. Let me guess, mother issues?
Right, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, I guess.
And they're talking about it directly related to being in the movies. They're like, Goodfellas, Godfather. Mm. That's why there'll never be an Italian-American president. But then the granddad is like, all right, but like you never see the Scotch-Irish complaining about cowboys, and it's not beating around the bush with talking directly to us about what they're discussing.
Totally, yeah. Because the son is like, what about Westerns? Like they are a classic part of American cinema, as are mafia movies. Like it is an identity. It's something to hang your hat on to an extent, and we see that repeated several times in this episode, of the nature of identity and representation being tied so closely together, and in some ways for some people positively,
especially for Christopher, because he clearly has reverence for the movies, as is shown in the next scene with another shot of his script. In this part of the script we get beautiful girl, thank you with 3 exclamation marks, Chip. I must be loyal to my capo. It's a very confusing script so far, but he gets a call from Tony, who's like, you got to come fucking down here. We're doing our shit. We're cleaning house. Come down and pick up some pastries on the way.
Yes. Yeah. And Chris is like, I'm busy.
Yeah.
I'm busy here writing a script about the mafia.
I'm smoking and looking at a cursor, which is actually what you do to write.
It really is.
So he goes down to this deli with like plastic windows for some reason.
That
really confused me. I don't know if this is like a New Jersey thing or if this is a common thing that we just don't see here, but all the tops of these windows are like rolled up plastic.
Yeah, the fact that it's like an empty building that was a set? Like, did they make this? I honestly don't know. Maybe it is a Jersey thing. I don't know. Yeah. Our New Jersey listener, please let us know if this is just real.
Is it a common thing? Because it doesn't look, it doesn't look like it's going as far as to be like, it reminds me of the body bag But yeah. I don't think that that is necessarily intentional here. I think it's just a place. But so Chris waits for ages and ages, and it's his turn, and then some other guy comes in who the pastry guy clearly knows, cuts the line, and server guy, asks him to cut the line. They're friends. Chris totally does not like it.
Nah, he's already sort of bubbling away, and he's in a bit of a bad mood, and he comes across as the kind of guy who just doesn't like waiting his turn anyway.
Part of
like three people in front of him, so it's like, how long have you been waiting? 7 minutes?
It has these like fade out, fade in cuts between them, as well as though heaps of time has passed. But yeah, it's a bakery; it can't be that long. Yeah, he is doing another part of the writing process, which is going and angrily ordering a lot of pastries at a bakery. But he is especially angry here. He like ushers this new guy out of the shop, and he's like, get the fuck out of here. Come back in 10 minutes. And then he whips out a gun and threatens this guy. He's like, give me the fucking cannolis and I'll leave the gun. And gets them and then shoots this guy in the foot. A lot like how Spider gets shot in the film Goodfellas.
Very, very astute pickup there, Knox. That's the kind of stuff you don't get anywhere else.
Other than
that sort of linkage.
Maybe IMDb. Maybe the biggest movie website. But yeah, he fucking unnecessarily shoots this guy in the foot. He shoots three shots, two into the roof and one into the foot.
Which, none of this is necessary, especially in context of the indictment's coming down. Everyone's trying to be subtle. Everyone's on the down low. They're not going big. They haven't shut down, like, you know, they said at the start, but they are cleaning house. Tony called it an extermination. They're getting the bugs. They're getting rid of the bugs.
Quite literally.
There are any bugs.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's right. They do say that at the wedding. Like, the idea of, like, do we fucking shut up for a while gets floated, and Junior's immediately like, no, we can't not do business.
Right.
So they keep him running as normal, but quietly, basically.
They don't want someone shooting a random person in the foot.
Yeah, so Christopher shows up with the pastries, and he's angry. Tony gives him shit. He's like, what, I called you last Christmas, and he throws the pastries down to the pool table, and Paulie comes running over. He's like, whoa, what are you doing? You're gonna wreck the
respecting
pastries.
The laws of the game and the pastry.
It's so funny. He like speeds into frame, grabs them really tenderly, and then goes out right by the camera. It's fuck, Paulie's good.
Yeah, I bet 100% that those were real pastries that he was going to eat, the actor. I'm 100% convinced.
Oh, man. So, yeah, after giving him, a bit of shit, Tony is as nice to him as he can be in this sort of situation. Or not as he can be, but, you know, he's bravado nice. He sort of grabs his head and he's like, hey, this is no time to get on the rag. You know, that's giving guidance. In this situation.
Sure.
He's trying to be helpful, but he's like, go with Georgie into the bathroom and sweep for bugs. Paulie looks so mad at him for throwing those pastries. And they're crawling around on the bathroom floor being disrespected. He's with this fucking, this like dropkick Georgie. He's he's like this softly spoken, like kind of dumb guy who's like, what? They didn't mention your name on TV. You're going to be fine. That was crazy hearing the words Brendan Filoni on the TV, wasn't it? Oh, the hell,
Georgie, you don't... It's like you specifically are trying to trigger his anxieties and insecurities. What are you doing, Georgie?
Because Christopher's like, yeah, well, I'm the guy who brought him here. Tony would have never known him if it wasn't for me. And Georgie's like, I had no idea about that. No, yeah.
Georgie's like reverse exposition guy.
Yeah.
He's like, he like asks all the leading questions. He sets up all the responses.
Yeah. And so now Tony and Carmella are hatching their little plan. They got a good plan here of where to hide all their shit.
Oh, yes. Yes.
They're around at the retirement home with Olivia there. And she's reading the obituaries again. She's got a paper her face on the obituaries page.
Yeah.
Carmella shows up and she's like, who is it? I'm sleeping. And Carmella's like, it's Carmella. And she's like, oh, okay, come in. I just did it so one of the fucking bitches around here wouldn't come inside. I don't know which one. It's that snooty-ass Mrs. Ryan down the hall. And then she throws another slur at her and all this stuff. But so Carmela's like, come on, let's go to brunch. And Livy's like, what's wrong? What's the problem? What's the panic? I'm panicking. Carmela can't get her out of there. She keeps going like, did Tony cheat on you? What's happening? Are you
Yeah.
And eventually she's like, oh, okay, if you don't shut up, I'm not going to take you to this nice place. And then Livy hears that it's the good place, like with those biscuits or whatever, she's like, okay.
But again, she's not easily fooled. She does immediately understand that something, you know, a covert is attempting to be done here.
Right.
And she's right.
Yeah, because Tony, like, has his seat flat so Livia won't see him and then pops up when she's gone. some music starts playing and we get a little montage of Tony hiding the shotguns and the money and all of that in Livia's little, like, storage boxes. She's got, like, old hats and clothes and shit in these storage boxes here, and you'd imagine they know that she never looks through them or whatever.
Yeah.
Because you want to be pretty damn sure if you're putting a shotgun in them.
Yeah, yeah. I think in my memory of this episode, they were like, they put them up in the, you know, the crawl space or something, but no.
Nah, just in the bottom of the boxes covered up by the clothes. I mean, worst case, if Livia does find them, she'll be shitty about it, but she won't be. She knows the deal.
That's true. That is true.
So I guess, like, you know, worst that's going to happen is she'll yell at Tony, but she's not exactly going to go to the FBI with this shit. So
yeah,
I guess it's good. But yeah.
Let's get back to that gabagool.
Tony's back at Melfi's office afterwards and telling her, like, hey, I might go on a holiday. I don't know when. I don't know if. But I might go on a bit of a holiday.
Yeah. Initially, it seems like she genuinely doesn't understand. She's like, what? So you don't know if you're going on a holiday?
Yeah. But very quickly, she's like, is this to do with the stuff on the news? And if you don't show up, I should assume you're on holiday and wait to be contacted. And he's like, that's a good assumption, I would say.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Christopher is still stressing about his writing, it looks like, or just generally stressing. He's a bit depressed. Mm-hmm. Paulie's round at his house, and the house is somewhat of a mess.
Yes.
Not.
Yes.
I wouldn't say as bad as it can get.
Yeah, I mean, Christopher hasn't been in lockdown for 6 months, so
no.
He doesn't know what is. Yeah,
he's
but it is. You know, it's just it's like a guy who, you know, was like fucking around last night and went to bed and then got up.
Right. Yeah, he's got like one pizza box, a couple of beers, whatever. But
Paulie's there to cheer him up, right? Like, it seems like this has been communicated that, you know, Christopher's not in a good mood.
Yeah.
Bring some girls around. Let's go out. Let's hit the town. Cheer him up.
That's it. Paulie's like, I thought we were going out. Get dressed. What's wrong with you? And he's like, they're saying you, kid. What's going on here? Talk to me. And really does look for him to open up to him. Like,
totally.
When we see these scenes of these, you know, forcing themselves to be tough guy men trying to connect with each other, I think they're well written. This show knows how to do pulled in, cloistered up men.
Absolutely. And I think of all of them, because I think, I don't know if it already happened, the scene with Big Pussy, where they just sort of going back and forth, Big Pussy and Christopher sort of on the situation. That's a fun scene. They put some music behind it. They do this technique they don't really do a lot in The Sopranos of just over the shoulder shots, like just medium shots of two people doing dialogue very rapidly. They cut between them, so they make it out like it's a very fun scene. You know, it feels like Tarantino or something.
Right.
But this scene with Paulie is surprisingly empathetic.
Yeah.
As in the performance, it feels like this guy who, I think we mentioned it maybe in the first episode of this, that the guy playing Paulie, Tony Sirico, was in the mob. He went to jail and I don't know how he got brought into being an actor. Maybe he was a consultant initially, one of those things where it's like, look, this guy was in the mob and we need someone to tell us if this is real or not. But whatever the case may be, he was in the mob. And it is, I think, even more surprising that he is so empathetic as a character. He feels like a very warm kind of guy.
I had no idea about that.
Yeah.
Because Paulie says here, they start talking about arcs, and Paulie's saying, like, okay, I get you writing a script. How much do you have? And Chris is like 19 pages out of like 120 it's meant to be.
Yep. Yep.
And Paulie's like, okay, be careful, because that writer guy blew his head off. So, like, he's being blunt, but he is sort of trying to be like, hey, just make sure you're looking after yourself, kind of. But
it's very, very funny that, yeah, Paulie's reference for a writer is Hemingway.
Right, yeah, like the bullfighter years guy. That guy with the bullfights.
Yes.
But, you know, Paulie's like kind of pushing him to be like, hey, Chris, you're not right here. What's going on? And they start talking about arcs. Paulie doesn't get it at first, but he sits down, he engages with Chris, and he's properly listening to him, which I really liked. He's genuinely being a shoulder to lean on.
Yes.
And Chris is like, I don't have a fucking arc. You know, a character starts here, they end up here. I've got nothing. And Paulie's like, I don't have an arc. I went to the army, I went to jail, and now I'm here. What of it? So what?
Yeah.
He says some line that's like, yeah, I had some bad shit happen to me, but I'm still here. I'm surviving.
Yes, exactly. Because Christopher doesn't want to just survive.
And yeah, exactly. That's what Christopher's problem is. It's not enough for him. They start trying to, like, Chris is explaining Devil's Advocate to Paulie here, and Paulie has the most thoughtful face on, just really analyzing Keanu Reeves in Devil's Advocate here. It doesn't quite understand it. So he's like, he doesn't get what Chris is saying, but he does respect that, hey, okay, I get that this is a big deal for you. So I'm telling you, hey, maybe it's okay to just be a guy.
Yes.
And to just exist, but I get that that's not enough for you. So let's try and blow this off and we'll try and have a good time in the meantime.
Yep. Yeah, he calls himself, he says, I was born, I grew up, spent a few years in the army, a few more in the can, and here I am, a half a wise guy, which is just great. That's totally Paulie.
And it's enough for him, right? And that, like we've said a few times now, it's just not enough for Chris. He goes into more detail with that later, but right now he tells Paulie about the dream, and it cuts to Big Pussy answering the same question. So he's, you know, he's going to all his confidants, I guess, with these problems, and he's like, hey, Pussy, I'm having these dreams about this guy. And Pussy's like, yeah, that happens, that's normal. The more killings you'll do, the fewer dreams you'll have.
Exactly. Yeah, this is the scene I was talking about before. And yeah, he says something like, you know, I had a guy chasing me through my dreams for months, but yeah, you keep killing, and the guilt fades away.
But Chris pushes the point that he thinks he fucked up, and he enlists Georgie to go and dig up the body and move it. Is their solution. It's really gross. The beard has grown and the nails have grown. I didn't know that was something that happened. But evidently it does.
And, yes.
They move this body for some reason. This doesn't seem necessary, but Chris is being a bit paranoid about it. So this is the step that he takes to try and ease his mind.
Yeah. Do they actually move it? I don't think we see it, right?
I think I guess he says something like, let's move this before they build a condo here.
Yeah.
Which then leads into Melfi and her ex-husband talking about selling some property where they're going to develop into, you'd assume, condos. So, well, their little cuts are going nicely into each other here.
Yeah. It's like a Seinfeld episode.
Yeah. It's the Harold format. They're still disagreeing. She's like, I always thought we'd build a house here. And he's like, I always thought we'd sell it. And they have more back and forth about you should get rid of this dude that you're seeing as a patient.
Yes.
Then we get a really, really nice shot. We move over to Tony standing in front of a fence, and he's got a train coming towards him from behind, and the camera tracks the train as it passes along behind Tony, spins around his face, looking concerned, and Chris pulls up in his Lexus there. It's such an unnecessary bit of effort to put into this shot, but it looks really nice, and I like seeing that quality and that attention to detail and stuff. It sets the show apart from others, especially at the time. Having that very cinematic shot there for no real, you know, purpose. I don't know if there's some meaning behind it, like, hey, even, you know, that Tony's brain is a train.
It's Yeah, it's that. I think it's this episode as well that had another shot that I've forgotten specifically what it was, but it did stick out as being particularly thoughtful and cinematic. I think this episode is my favorite so far. I think it everything about it, the intertwining of plots, as you just said, the plot itself, like I find the indictment stuff really is starting to ramp up and become an interesting sort of external conflict or external pressure. All the character stuff has been great. The writing's good. It's I think it's a really good episode.
And I really like this scene that we get now between Tony and Christopher driving along. Christopher's driving. As soon as Tony gets in, he like punches Christopher in the side of the head and he's like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" Chris is like, "I'm not feeling great." And Tony says, "Well, I wipe my ass with your feelings. So how about that?" But they start having a discussion, a very awkward discussion where
it's so awkward. Fucking Tony.
Oh man, they're kind of trying to open up to each other. Tony's like, "Fuck you, you shot this guy in the foot. We don't need that kind of attention right now. What's wrong with you?" And Tony, you know, yells at him for a bit, but eventually it calms down and Christopher says that he thinks the regularness of life is too fucking hard for him. And I like that line a lot. And I like that that is Christopher's clearly depressed.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
you know, something. I'm not a psychiatrist. But if I were, I would tell him he's depressed. And then he would say, "What are your credentials?"
I'm going to stop calling you Dr. Adam. You keep telling me I have to refer to you as Dr. Adam, but I thought you were a psychiatrist, to be honest.
I just say that to get dirt on people. There's no confidentiality here. But yeah, he's saying this stuff that Tony picks up on because Tony has heard the professional opinion of someone when they get told these symptoms.
Yeah, it's a really interesting scene because I didn't necessarily come out of it thinking Christopher was like clinically depressed. Like, you're right. The line that he starts off with is like an absolute key signifier of, you know, generalized depression. Finding normal life too hard is like, well, that's what, when you do have depression, that's how you feel.
Yeah.
But this may not be the proof that Christopher is depressed. He can just feel this way as well. So it's an interesting way to lead into this. And it does spark Tony, his sort of parroting of the medical diagnoses that he's been hearing.
But he's hiding it, you know? Yes. And it's such a great job from both of them and from the writing in this of him trying to see if Christopher's okay without giving away that he is or was not. You know?
Right.
Like,
yes.
He's like, "I bet you're sleeping all the fucking time, huh, you idiot?" Like, it's basically that. Just going like, "Fuck you, what are your symptoms?" Trying to be tough.
Yes.
And Christopher says it's the only thing he still enjoys. Tony pushes a little bit more, and they have this back and forth about it. Christopher thinks he has cancer because Paulie was sad. Jackie was sad
Jackie,
when he was dying.
Yeah, yeah.
But so Tony kind of tries to go, "Hey, you know, have you thought about..." He doesn't say, "Have you thought about talking to someone?" But he's pushing in the direction of maybe this is a mental health issue. And Christopher pushes back against that and goes, "Prozac is bullshit. Talking to someone is bullshit." He says, "I'm no fucking mental midget," is the words that he says.
Yep.
And all of these shitty things that he's saying about their point of view, you know, that world's point of view on the world of psychiatric care, obviously hits Tony because he goes to try to light a cigarette backwards. He's very flustered by this whole thing, and he's being directly having it confirmed that his thoughts on how people will react to this are accurate.
100%. Christopher is saying everything that he said to Melfi people would say. He's literally saying, "You're weak. You're an idiot.
Exactly.
You can't be trusted," you know, all of that stuff. And yeah, Tony's been vulnerable with Melfi so many times, and he was being vulnerable in this moment in as guarded a way as, you know, possible.
Right.
But it fucking hits him. He's really clearly upset. And I think it's an interesting angle on Christopher as well, because yeah, like I said, he's saying these things that are like really clear red flags for depression. And then he's contradicting them, or he's saying like, no, that's not me. And it's hard to tell if he's just putting up a front and you know, putting bravado out to Tony because that's what is expected, or if he is more just like, no, I've been a bit upset lately, but I'm not like in that bad a way. It's hard to tell.
I think he is putting up the front. It seems that way, that they're both putting up fronts, and if they both just fucking cut it out, they'd be fine. But
right.
Neither of them's going to take that first leap because Tony's like pretending he's heard about serotonin on TV and shit like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But as close as they can while keeping their guards up, they kind of have a decent conversation about it, sort of. I mean, that ends with them joking about like a bunch of fucking losers blowing their brains out in the bathroom. Huh? Ridiculous. So they're trying, but their fronts are getting in the way of them dealing with this stuff.
Yeah, but I think the start of that conversation is enough to give Christopher the sense that Tony would be open to speaking about it. Tony does come across that way, I feel like. So it's they're doing their best.
I think they're both reassured by the end that, or at least Christopher is reassured that Tony is there for him. And I don't know if Tony feels like he's helped. I think he certainly feels like he has to keep his fucking mouth shut about the seeing a psychiatrist as much as he can.
Yes. Yeah, agreed.
Meanwhile, Anthony Jr. is playing a little bit of Blast Corps in the Nintendo 64.
yes.
Which is a great game. He's hitting the buttons way too hard to be doing anything on the screen, but good for him. And the FBI shows up to Tony's house.
Yes. I recognize this guy. I don't know maybe if it's just from The Sopranos, but I thought it was a good performance for, you know, as little as he got to do.
Right. Yeah, the main FBI guy is like, look, do this sensibly. You got kids in the house. We're not going to be knocking you out or anything, but we've got a warrant. Let us search a house.
Yeah.
And they do it. Tony and the whole family are pissed off about it. Melfi's seen him not show up to his appointment. And, you know, they take the computers. Meadow's got homework. They're smashing a bowl. Mm-hmm. Everyone's pissed off at each other. It's a shitty experience for them, as you would imagine the FBI combing over your house would be, but it goes pretty smoothly for how, you know, it could have gone.
Up until the point where the sort of offsider FBI guy is revealed to be an Italian.
Right, yeah, that sets Tony off for some reason. He's like, fuck you, man. You're smashing my bowls instead of smashing the FBI's bowls.
Yeah. Who are you're betraying your people is basically what he's saying.
Yeah. He's really, really giving him a stink eye.
Yeah. The guy's called Grasso as well, which, like, fuck, if you want to be talking to the, you know, the law enforcement about Italians, fucking name Grasso is about as on point as you can get.
A grass. Is that what it is?
He's a grass. Yeah, right. Yes, he's a snitch.
So they're talking about it over a takeaway later that night because I guess all of their food was in that bowl.
Yeah, I guess so.
They're just having...
They confiscated everything in the fridge, I guess.
They can order a succulent Chinese meal if they want to. But so they're talking about...
They probably didn't have time to cook because there were bloody FBIs in the kitchen.
That's a good point. Yeah. So yeah, they're having a talk about it, and it's kind of the opposite of the Melfi family talk.
Yeah,
where
yes.
The Soprano family has a talk about, like, we should be proud of all of our Italian heritage. Everyone's against us Italians, and that's what gives us a bad name, is that we already have this prejudice against us. Alexander Graham Bell didn't invent the telephone. It was this other guy. Here are all these other Italian people that they don't tell you about in school because they already fucking hate us.
And as far as I can tell, there's more than a kernel of truth to that.
Yeah.
Like, the reason that the mafia exists is because it was sort of an inter-community police force. It was people taking care of each other, protecting each other. And yeah, there was fucking heaps of racism against Italians in America.
If the system is set up so that you are being made, so that it is preventing you from making money, what option do you have to come out on top of that system than by disobeying its laws?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It still exists in the real world today. It hasn't been solved in the last 20-ish years.
Yeah.
It's not that much time, but, you know, like, it's... both sides of this have their point, and they are... You can understand it from how they're talking about it, you know.
I think so. I do. Well, I think maybe the ex-husband was not a great performance, or one that I found, you know, interesting. The writing of these two parallel plot lines is really good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just having these families look at the camera basically and go, hey, here's the first viewpoint, here's the second.
Yeah.
So then Tony goes back to Melfi afterwards and she's like, hey, you didn't show up last week, like you said. And he's like, yeah, how about that, huh? She's like, you know, because we agreed to this at the start, you still owe me the money for that. And that does not sit well with Tony. And his response is to say, oh, you're just in this for the money, huh? How about I throw some money at you? Because that's what you are. You're a whore, is, I believe, his exact words and the way that he says it.
Yeah, yeah. He's played by Trey Parker in that scene.
Yeah. So Melfi kind of stands her ground, because obviously she's been having it in her ear that this guy's dangerous, and then he like lashes out at her. And
yeah, he stands over her, literally. He gets up and he looms over her.
She stands her ground as much as she can, and she's like, I don't appreciate being made to feel scared, and I don't think that this is appropriate, what you're doing here. And she's like, oh, well, this was the fucking agreement, dude, so whatever. He storms out. Mm. And then we get this scene at the retirement home of just the most depressing thing I've ever seen.
This is a great scene. I think this is another reason why I love this episode.
This fucking comedian is on stage with his burgundy pants and his like check jacket and his big fucking gross looking tie.
Yep.
And he's getting nothing. And his jokes are terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, they are awful.
They're very bad. He's doing impressions of Ed Sullivan and shit, and he's like, he was going to be a tree surgeon, but he fainted at the sight of sap. He's got his arms spread out. He's like, all right, everybody, pace yourselves. Don't laugh all at once. They hate it so much. He tells...
Tonight on our show, we have Mitzi Gaynor, Sergio Frankie, and a woman from France who pull a string of light bulbs out of her husband's throat. This woman can relate.
Yeah. His
fucking
second joke
good stuff.
is a combination of being anti-Polish and a rape joke, so good for him, man. Well,
I think I saw this guy at a Melbourne Open Mic about 4 years ago.
Yeah, I think I was this guy at a Melbourne Open Mic about 10 years ago. But Corrado, which is apparently his name. He's there.
Yes.
Talking to Olivia, and she straight away is like, you know, Tony's seeing a psychiatrist. And he's like, a psychiatrist? And she's like, I know, a psychiatrist. Meanwhile, this dude's fucking playing harmonica on stage and doing his Ed Sullivan impression.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're talking about Tony seeing a psychiatrist. Junior seems like confused by it. I don't know if it's that he doesn't believe it, or he's just not accepting it or something. He seems to be struggling with what he's being told here.
Yes.
And again, she is like, because he had such a bad mother, he has to go out.
Yeah.
You are fucking bad, but whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, Junior knows now.
And then, but at the end, Livia is like, I don't want there to be any repercussions. It's like, well, why did you tell someone about it? I guess she probably wanted to be like, yeah, he's seen a psychiatrist, probably about his awful mother, and wanted to have someone be like, no, you're not awful. Like, I can't, I guess, yeah, she's wanting to, I guess, personally fuck with Tony, but not professionally, I guess.
I don't know if it's even real, the thing she's saying of not wanting repercussions either. I think that's her doing her bullshit where she's like, hey, I don't want any problems, but you all fucking suck and I'm the only one who's good here. Even if I do the same things that I make fun of other people for doing, make fun of, viciously attack other people for doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Christopher, again, he's at home. He gets a call on the answering machine from his mother. She's like, I'm worried about you. You're not answering my calls. They just mentioned your name in the newspaper, and he springs out of bed.
Yeah, this is the first time. So the idea, before, because this is the very end.
Yeah.
There was a couple of things that were interesting. One of them in the Livia scene is that Junior mentions that there might be a mole. They suspect there's a mole within their organization. A couple of things have been a little too, you know, perfectly aligned, a little too coincidental. So that's, I guess, a plot thing. There's a leak. They think there's a leak.
Because that's the thing. I don't think that they're specifically saying a mole. They're saying something, somehow it's getting out here. And so if that's the time that it gets brought up that Tony is talking to someone potentially about this stuff, well, now we got ourselves a rabbit hole to climb down.
Exactly. And I think, the other thing, because Christopher sort of, he gets an arc in this episode, and it sort of comes, not full circle, but it reaches a certain crescendo, which might be sort of bad for him. But earlier, in that conversation with Tony, I just remembered, Tony sort of accuses Christopher of wanting to be caught. And that is that's the sort of middle point of this arc, is that Christopher wants to be recognized for being a cool mafia guy. And then subconsciously, Tony's spot on. The way to do that would be to get caught. And that is why he lashes out at that guy in the bakery.
Right. And Tony's like, I've seen this before. You're doing the exact same thing. Pull your fucking head in. Yes, I completely skimmed over that.
And it's a common trope. It's a real thing. This isn't
murderers
just a TV
do it
thing.
All the time, right?
It's a big thing with serial killers. They're doing the killings for a feeling of power, and they want that power to be recognized by society by getting caught. And in this case, it's just Christopher wanting to be recognized for doing crime.
A very scary thing you hear said about serial killers is that there are many more active than people know about. And that most of the only ones who get caught are those ones who want to get caught, because it's incredibly difficult to find someone if they're not in any way, like, attached to the person they've killed. It's a scary fact.
Yeah, right.
This isn't one of those podcasts where we talk about that. So you've got 75% of all existing podcasts to go through if you want to talk about that, but it just made me think of it.
Yes.
And I got panicked, so I had to get it out of my brain.
But also, this technically is a true crime podcast now, which means it'll be really popular.
Yeah. We get one more little scene of this family of Melfi's, the Melfi family, I guess. Her name would be Melfi. That would be a name prior to the marriage to this guy. She's, I don't know. But they're doing like family therapy with their own psychiatrist. And this guy sucks.
Yeah, he's so bad. But this is what I was sort of mentioning before. Like, there is an element to the romance of these criminal lifestyles, ethnically speaking, that people find identity in and find, some sort of positive angle to their life. It makes them feel more interesting. It makes them feel like they have an arc, you know, that they're part of a storyline, like Christopher says.
Right. Because this guy also tells Melfi, like, if I were you as a colleague, I would drop him. And the ex-husband is like, she finally admitted that she saw the other side of him. The subhuman side is the way he puts it. So, but, she says that she was frightened and revolted at his actions and stuff. And she's like, what's wrong with all of you? When did we, when did we stop helping people out? Like, of course, this person has problems. I'm a psychiatrist.
Right, right.
And then this guy laughs at some joke he makes to himself or something. This guy seems like not a great psychiatrist, but, they kind of wrap
not
it up
not at all.
There. Christopher runs over to this newspaper stand thing, buys a paper, sees his name, tiny little small part in a big list of names, and he is so excited that he puts another quarter in the thing and takes every single newspaper in there.
Yeah, so that's the thing with Christopher's arc, is that I don't think that he's learned anything necessarily. No. That's the problem here. All of these guys are getting reinforced, about the wrong things. Sure, they're getting support from each other, but at the end of the day, they are members of the mafia.
Yeah.
And they do think it's cool to be famous.
And Christopher was depressed because he wasn't getting recognized for being a big bad gangster. And now he feels he has been recognized for being a big bad gangster. And that is the solution to him.
Exactly. Yep.
There's no internal progress being made at all.
No. Yeah, good episode. Like I said, I think it's my favorite so far. It's very, had a lot going on. It felt very cinematic. A lot of plot stuff that I found exciting. And yeah, we just continue to drive these relationships forward. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I'm like, it's so on the binge. So in Australia, Binge is one of the streaming services that gets the HBO stuff, and it's got the IMDb ratings for the episodes under the episodes on it.
Oh,
and this is the highest rated one behind College.
Yeah,
College was higher, yeah. And Denial, Anger, Acceptance, which is the one where Tony was visiting Jackie in the hospital and where Brendan is killed at the end, episode four. Right. Yep. Three, that's equally rated. So IMDb agrees with you, Ben.
That's awful. Did I mention my favorite movie is The Shawshank Redemption or The Dark Knight?
The two posters I have up in my man cave.
Yes. But yeah, great episode. I loved it.
Me too, yeah. I'm still enjoying the hell out of this show. Every episode is doing a good job for being like, when serialized shows of this nature weren't common,
yes.
when this was coming out, it's doing a good job of keeping that serial nature going and having a self-contained episode as well that doesn't feel like what were other serial shows that done, like Buffy or whatever. It doesn't feel soap opery, and it doesn't feel like a Buffy where it's like a monster of the week thing and here's these couple of scenes furthering the overall plot.
Totally. I think there was the X-Files had like a similar thing going on.
Right.
I don't think I watched a single episode of Sex and the City, but as far as I could tell, it was still very episodic.
Yeah.
For being an HBO show, a prestige show. And the Larry Sanders Show, which was early 90s, had ongoing storylines, but it was a comedy.
Right.
So it sort of, and it also was, yeah, it had self-contained episodes where it was like focusing on an episode of The Tonight Show and the guests would come in and it would be like David Spade's, you know, conflict with Larry.
Yeah.
So it would be, it was probably closer to Sex and the City. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. This is incredibly well-balanced and yeah, loving it so far.
Same.
So I guess we will talk to our listeners next week with episode 9.
Boca.
Yeah, Boca. Another classic episode with a very memed and familiar element to it.
Yes, this is the one that I remember from when I watched this 15 years ago or whatever. I watched like the first series maybe, but I haven't remembered almost any of this so far. I definitely remember aspects of the next episode and we'll be going down to the bottom of it next week. We'll be diving deep.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
We'll be just making sure we really eat the pussy of that episode next week.
If you want to get in touch, gabagoolboys@gmail.com, especially if you talk about Boca, because we've actually already watched it, so you're not going to spoil it for us. Gabagoolpod on Instagram is where you can leave a comment or send a message as well. Thanks to everyone who has. It's been super, super cool. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you use Apple Podcasts. Otherwise, share the podcast with a friend. Send it in a DM. Slide in and say, hey, The Sopranos recap podcast that's good is this one. Phrase it that way.
Cool.
But yeah, thank you so much for listening and we'll see you next week.
Bye. Should I stop now or? Yeah, okay.